Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is the Migscast, and I am Steve Miggs, and I am here with the Reverend in Fuego.
Hello,
Glenn Cannon.
Sup?
What's up?
What's up?
Good to see you guys. Here
we are. See you guys as well.
Just a couple of weeks from Migsfest, and it's a Migsfest theme today on the Migscast because we're going to be chatting with any minute from now. Drummer extraordinaire from Jane's Addiction, Stephen Perkins, is going to be calling in and joining us. I cannot express how excited I am. He's one of my, I put him in my top five. He's on my Mount Rushmore of drummers.
Wow, nice.
I was thinking about that on the way in here this morning. I'm like, oh, that's cool. Perk's calling in. And I'm like, what would I talk to him about? I'm like, nothing. I think I'm just going to sit there and listen to Steve.
Let Steve geek out.
It's like, I, you know, like, hey, Steve, big fan. Anyway. Well, Steve is a Stephen Perkins, but big fan beyond that.
P.H. Steve.
Uh-oh.
Big fan.
Uh-oh.
Is he calling?
Yeah,
here we go.
Yeah.
Let's get right into it. Steven? Is it Steven?
Good morning.
Hey, man. This is Steve, Glenn, and the Rev from the Migscast. How you doing, my man?
I'm having a great day. How's life?
Things cannot be better. I'm going to talk to one of my absolute all-time favorite drummers. I can't complain.
Well, tell me when he gets on the line. I like to talk to him.
Okay, yeah. He's going to call any minute now. Don't worry about it. I was just saying to these guys, I was like, you know, Stephen Perkins, I would put you in my Mount Rushmore of drummers without a doubt, A, because of your drumming ability, and also just the influence that you've had on so many drummers, including myself. I mean, once I first started hearing the way that you play drums, it was just like, I can't play like him, but I'm sure as hell going to try.
Well, you know, I really had a moment in my early teens when I knew I couldn't be Neil Peart or John Bonham. And, you know, no one's going to touch Buddy Rich.
Yes.
And then I bought this record by Peter Gabriel called Security.
Mm-hmm.
And on that record, there was no cymbals or hi-hat, just drums. And then I started to play to that record over and over, and I thought, you know, this would be cool if I can hybrid my love for tribal rhythms.
Yep.
An African drummer named Baba Tunde Olatunji, a guy named Fela Kuti, who's kind of like the James Brown of Africa, involved these African rhythms that I like. And then, of course, my love for AC/DC and Deep Purple and all the great Sabbath, and somehow infuse the two, because I didn't want to try to, in a sense, you can only replicate your heroes for so long, and then you have to somehow find your own voice. And, you know, with Jane's Addiction at 17, I was surrounded by a guy, you know, the bass player. He was interested in finding his own voice.
Mm-hmm.
And Navarro was already on the quest to be like, you know, the psychedelic Eddie Van Halen. And then we had Perry writing poems, not really lyrics.
Yeah.
So these poems were great to have events, musical events happen once or twice a song, but never go back to them. We don't repeat them like a chorus or a super big, you know, outro. We kind of just have these events, and so the drums really had this orchestral approach, and plus, you know, the hybrid of tribal and of course, you know, the chops and the rudiments. As a youngster, it's so important to feel like you can be a little machine gun at all times, and as you grow older, you realize the machine gun's great, but then you also want to be a sniper and use it once in a while.
I think a
great drum part with a great bass line reminds me of one of my favorite painters, M.C. Escher, where you see the white duck and the black duck.
Uh-huh.
And these patterns, you know, and the patterns go right off the canvas. They keep going. And which one do you look at? It doesn't really matter. And even if...
Uh-oh.
Hello?
...section stays together, the pattern continues on, and it's a perfect fit, like a puzzle. And I really, you know, I hear that in great African music and, of course, some of the great blues music and, you know, and even some of the stuff that was coming out of Motown where it was more about the anchor, the drum part being the anchor. you still hear this this tribal, almost like a djembe, if the guy was wearing a djembe between his legs. It's, you know, just a simple heartbeat.
Dude, it's so funny hearing... It's so funny hearing you say that, because I'm just like, man, all this time paying attention to what you were doing, I actually was picking up on what you were throwing down, because a lot of times what has inspired me, and it's on a whole different level and a whole different style, but even with when I play the drums, it's like, okay, I want to create moments for parts of the songs, even if it's something as simple as just dropping out and just letting the ride go, so that when the next part happens, it's more of an explosion. And that's something that I...
Yeah, you've got it. Exactly. You've got impact. And you know what? People ask about rhythm, and it's not when you hit, it's when you don't hit.
Yes.
And you need to have both of the absence of the noise and the noise, and then, you know, together over and over, you have a rhythm.
What's funny, even
and,
like...
And it's amazing, because a drummer looks at a silent room, and it's more like a hammer. You know, a guitar player can come into a silent room, it's more like a paintbrush. You can brush your sound. But a drummer has got to pierce the sound, in a sense... and kind of punctuate the silence with these, like, little moments of a you know, I guess you can say noise in some people's opinion, but for me, drums are quite musical.
You guys are the...
They're very musical drums. A drummer, you know, can play a melody on a drum set. If you pull the other instruments out, you still hear a melodic drum part, and that's really, you know, African and Latin-based, and of course, rock and roll is always based... straight out of the blues, and blues comes from Africa, so it's all together.
Yeah, man. You know, it's really hearing you sum up all these thoughts on how you approach music, and even, you know, some of your bandmates in Jane's Addiction. Everything you say, you know, as a big fan of yours and a big fan of all the projects you've been involved with, I'm just sitting here going, oh man, that makes total sense. Oh man, that makes total sense. Oh man, like it's really cool, Steven, because everything you're saying is like water is wet, and I'm like, oh man, yeah, I really get where he's coming from. It's cool to hear you just sum it up so casually. Whereas a listener, you know, I've been consumed by just all the textures you guys painted and all the atmospheres you guys created, and you're like, oh man, well here's where my heart is. It's really fascinating to hear that, man. It really is.
Well, we wrote a lot of the early Jane stuff. Late night after hours, you know, after midnight is when we started writing the tunes. Now, with Porno for Pyros, we wrote a lot of the tunes on surf trips sitting at a campfire.
And again,
Bongos.
That's so, it makes so,
it
it's so
yeah.
transparent.
I can picture that with the music, yeah.
Yeah, man, it's incredible how transparent that is. It's really cool, man. It's really cool.
Absolutely. And the lyrics and the rhythms for Bali Eyes and Tahitian Moon and all those songs for Porno really were based on a friendship going surfing. And with the Jane's Addiction stuff, it was more about the friendship in a garage, you know, chipping away at the instruments over and over. And so, you know, it's great to hear that listening back, how it's more than just a song. It's a memory. It's a postcard of my life. And then I can celebrate it with the song. And then, you know, there's always the new version. When you get on stage, everything changes because you grew up a little and you've got more things to either say or keep secret, you know, so to speak.
Undoubtedly, man, undoubtedly.
And speaking of getting up on stage, to say that I have Stephen Perkins and Peter DeStefano and Zach Malang jumping up on stage for my birthday, for a celebration of my birthday for Migs Fest, is I can't even believe I'm speaking those words, but you guys are going to be on stage with our band, Glenn and I are in a band called Bruiser Brody, and a bunch of other great local bands as well. Going to be a part of this on October 12th. Yep. For those that are planning on coming to Migs Fest or thinking about it, exactly what can they expect when Stephen Perkins, Zach Malang, and Peter DeStefano jump up on stage? How do you describe what you guys are going to be doing on stage at Club Sur on October 12th?
Well, I think the best vehicle for hard rock music and exploration is a power trio. Like Cream, of course, the great Rush, you know, ELP, Blue Cheer, The Police, all these bands with just three people are forced to really explore, you know, not only the melody and the rhythm, but also in the moment they have a chance to kind of take things and bend them and not really follow the arrangement, so to speak, but make the arrangement as the moment, you know, calls. And I think if we played at 3 p.m. in the afternoon outdoors, it's going to sound a lot different than playing at 10 p.m. inside a party. And that's what I love about power trios, is that you can be in the moment, take from the environment, and actually put it right back into the show. So, you know, Pete and I have played together for so many years, but we've taken some time off, and that's always good for us, too. It makes it sound not only more fresh, but there's a sense of surprise on what we've been working on separately and what we bring to the table. And it was Zach. I mean, it's been 20 years since Vashon Island, and you were there, too, Migs. I mean, think about it. That's do they still party like that on Vashon Island?
Probably. No. Well, they might, but for different reasons. Yeah, you're right. That's, dude, I can't believe that's 20 years ago.
I mean, I still tell everybody that, you know, it's like the tales of great Ulysses. It's the there's sirens, and they call, and you go, and you crash, and you can't get off. Yeah. But I think what you're going to get also is a sense, like any great rock show or even a hot jazz show, in my opinion, is the sense that it's urgent and the musicians have something to say. And, you know, with their favorite songs and from Iggy Pop to Led Zeppelin to all the great porno songs, if you want to choose from any, the Sabbath, all that stuff gives the power trio the chance to play the tune and then disconnect from the tune and go somewhere else. And on stage, in the moment, and I think that's really the most important thing about being a player, is not going into that repeat mode. And we haven't played in years, and then with Zach, it's been, you know, 2 decades, so you're getting something that's quite new, even to the musicians. And I always appreciate when the musicians are also enjoying the ride, like the audience, because it's a roller coaster. You're not sure where it's going to go, what turn, at what time.
Oh, man, I'm looking forward to it even more now. This is going to be a blast for Migs Fest on October 12th over at Club Sur. You guys are going to be doing some incredible stuff up there. I would love to share something with you, because recently we had someone, a texter texted us and said, if there was one song you could listen to for the rest of your life, what one song would that be? And there was no hesitation for me, and I truly mean this. Even if you weren't on the line, you could even ask our mutual friend Tavis. There's been many random nights where he was driving me home, and I was in my own little world, and I'm like, Tavis, put 3 days on.
I knew you were going to say 3 days.
To me, it's the greatest song ever written. There's just so much to that song, and I would love to hear like your stories about the making of the song, the recording of the song. Just nerd out with us about 3 days, man, because to me it's if you looked up epic song in the dictionary, it's 3 days, in my opinion.
Well, what I like about the tune, first of all, is getting on stage and playing it, because it can go from 8 minutes to 13 minutes, depending on what's happening between the musicians and the audience, and, you know, what happened even that into the show.
Uh-huh.
But the truth is, it's a poem, and when you think about when the moments in the song change and graduate to the next progression, we don't go back to the one we just left behind. So the poem doesn't repeat, and nor do the parts in the song. And so as the beginning is this romance and the story of how the night unfolded, and then Perry switches into True Hunting's Over, that gave me a cue to go tribal. I heard the poem and thought, I think I need to go from the tom, you know, from the snare and the ride to this kind of psychedelic romance we're telling, into a more of a tribal voodoo. You know, you might want to put a little makeup under your eyes and get camouflage. And of course, like I said earlier, I lock in with Eric or the bass player. You know, at the time, of course, it was Eric, and he was not only making this imprint on me, like in Mountain Song,
yep,
where he plays and over and over. He says to me, "What's your drum part?" I'm over like the MC Escher. How do you fit together? Don't just jam and come back and forth and leave me hanging. Show me where, you know, how we fit like a hand in a glove. And so there was always that in the back of the mind for the rhythm section. And then for me, and then of course me and Dave went to high school together. So the first thing I hear is guitar. Everything I play is signified by a guitar. If Navarro does something to the right, I'll go left. If he goes left, I go right. Sometimes we'll meet in the middle. But I'm always paying attention to him. And that, you hear that in the solo. I'm constantly talking to him and playing, you know, catch up or get two horses in it. And so there's there's conversations between the musicians, there's conversation between the musician and the poem, and then there's leaving each part behind so the production gets the change. They don't have to repeat in the sense that they make a second pass, which would be the second half, and then you make a third pass, which would be the solo on. And then as it gets to what I call the more maybe metallic, more epic dark side when you're going to the battle, you know, to me, you're going into battle, you know, and your audience is your soldiers, and, you know, it's one for all, and if they're jumping up and down, if they're spinning in a circle, or if they're just standing there with their eyes closed, and or sitting on a beanbag, whatever it is they're doing, and that's how the band sounds, and then Perry signifies the change with you, and the band falls to pieces, you know, and I think it's all cinematic. It's all poem-driven, you know, written at late night over and over after midnight, late-night sessions, you know, not putting the lights on, lighting the candles when you play the song. And then, you know, after being on tour, nothing shocking, we're touring for months and months. We already had that song written, so we were playing it over and over on stage. By the time we got to record Ritual, what you're hearing is just a live performance in the studio called Track Records in Nevada, Hollywood.
Wow!
So you guys had like a loose. So,
we didn't have to do the song more than once or twice. I think that was the first take. I mean, we played it so many times in the last 10 months, and such a studio, same scene, light the candles, you know, to tune the drums, you know, prepare with the party favors. And with as the sun goes down, you know, the red light goes up for recording. And I think what you hear on the recording is a bunch of friends, really a tight friendship, you know, in union with a tight. And then, you know, besides all the time it took to write, it took to play it on tour, and all the fun times you have, the show, you know, important, and then the song more important, and you have this this one moment with the audience, erotic Jesus, and the audience is with you. All that sums up into the recording process, and then the process is, okay, we got a volcano, it hasn't burst. It's all that experience of writing it, playing it, talking about it. What do you do when you record it? You got to make sure you a volcano and wipe out Pompeii with it.
That's so awesome.
Oh, man.
And, you know, to me, the influence of Jane's Addiction is not really the sound, though, that you hear that. And maybe the musicianship made a ripple effect on maybe how other people played or maybe not. But I think it was the fact that possible arena rock, not because it sounds like it, because it's important enough to get 10,000 people a night to hear it. And I think that was the influence for we were the soil or the dirt. And if the flower was the Pumpkins and Nirvana and, you know, Alice and all the great bands, Tool, Rage, whatever, they didn't sound like us, but they grew out of what we were planting.
Absolutely.
And I think that's a good influence.
Yeah, you know? I think at the time, I know when I was first exposed to you guys, I'd never heard anything like it, because it was psychedelic but not psychedelic. It was metal but not metal. It was heavy radio rock but not heavy radio rock. You guys were remarkably unique. I mean, there were hooks buried deep in the song because of some of the things Eric and you did. I mean, texturally, the band was amazing. Some of the stuff Perry does with his voice. I mean, so I know as a listener, I first heard this. Part of what caught me was I had never heard anything like it, but I could easily access it and connect to it. Like, I just went, man, I understand this, but wow, I've never heard anything like it. And I think it's very fair to say a lot of bands have spawned from, you know, the seed you guys planted, because it's a very diverse and broad seed, man. I mean, what you guys did, there's never been anything before like it, and never anything since, I think. I mean, just as a fan, man, I got to tell you, like, that's where my heart is with you guys. You're remarkably influential, and it's rare that a band comes along that is that unique. I mean, you guys did a little bit of everything, but you weren't aping anyone. It was so fresh, man. And it still is to this day. It's cool. Like, there are records age, and you guys, it's timeless. There are records you're like, oh, you can tell that was produced in 84. And your albums will never have that. They're timeless, man. What you guys did is really remarkable and unique, brother.
Well, you know what was cool is our record collection had Lou Reed and the Stones and had Bauhaus and Susie and the Banshees and then had Metallica and had Slayer and all that. If you put it all in a blender.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And then take some Grateful Dead and some Jefferson Airplane and then, you know, even some Genesis and ELP, some of the sophisticated musicianship, you know, we listened to that together and separately and, you know, and we made fun of it together and separately. But, you know, that was the young mind of a hybrid of all this music and art. And just like, you know, another great artist who I think changed everything was Jackson Pollock, because the day before he threw the paint, he was using brushes like everybody else.
Yep.
And all of a sudden he said, I'm going to throw the paint. People said, you're crazy. And he stuck to it. And that's what Jane's Addiction did. We threw the paint and kept throwing it. And, you know, everything around us already hit the ceiling. The Sunset Strip with with Rat and Poison and Motley and GNR. They hit the ceiling. They did what they did. They weren't going to get different. And the punk rock scene in L.A., even around the country, somewhat hit the ceiling. I mean, X and the Minutemen, they were just such quality musicians and band records. But were they going to get any bigger? Who knew? I mean, it didn't seem like it. And then you had what I considered really good music, but was somewhere in the middle with, like, the Pretenders and R.E.M. And, you know, it wasn't safe and it wasn't rock. It was definitely just very intelligent musicians making music. But, you know, there wasn't something on the edge like Jane's Addiction. Mm-hmm.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses. Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
I'd love to bring up going back to the whole thing with party favors. I think about many party favors consumed and many nights spent just obsessing over Ritual Daily Obitual. And obviously I mentioned, you know, 3 days, but another song I remember just zoning out and being in my own little world and my mind exploded when I first heard Then She Did. And each time I heard it after that, I was like, oh my gosh, this, that. I was just curious from your end, has there ever been a record like that you still to this day, like I'll still zone out to your records, not just, you know, not just Ritual, but your other records as well. Is there a record that pops to your mind that's like, yeah, I'm going to zone out and just enjoy the musical journey that this album takes me on?
Oh, I constantly go and do that in my home studio. If I'm not making music back there, I'm putting on my old favorites and examining not only the recording process and how wonderful it all sounded. And, you know, I have these memories and postcards of my experience. I try to get into their postcard and memory bank and see what it was like when back in the day they recorded this over there. And this, even things that would be kind of random, you know, a Thin Lizzy record or, you know, even a something that would be some, you know, back in the day it seemed so simple, you know, Jackson 5 perhaps, something that you kind of examine now and go, my God, these guys played. They played with soul, and it was captured. And they did it probably once or twice. They didn't overdo it like everybody today. And so I like to just go through my library and really explore. I mean, lately, The Trick of the Tail by Genesis is a record I listen to a lot because I'm trying to figure out the precision and the mindset of a left-handed Phil Collins drummer. And he is so brilliant and so unusual. It still throws me when I try to imitate. When I try to imitate him, it's still spontaneous to me. Oh, why did he do that there? I forgot. He's a lefty. So, he leads with his left hand. So, and so I like to listen to music for so many different reasons. And now I've got a 9-year-old, and I can hear and see music through his eyes and ears and feel the excitement of exploration and lyrical, first time exploring lyrics and seeing how that affects him. And I think I had just the music on in the background. He was reading a book. A song, Mississippi Queen, My Mountain, came on, and da-da-da-da, and he looked up, he goes, what's that? And I was like, yeah, that's like, you know, he heard this riff. Went away, I was like, cool, man, because, you know, some people hear a riff, it doesn't affect them. He heard a riff, and he looked up, and I started to hear the riff differently, and hearing the power of the band more, you know, inept for me to feel, oh, it's just a good rock riff. No, man, that's, you know, if a 9-year-old, his ears perk up, you know, there's something there. The song is 60, you know, 50 years old or 40 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Ritual is going to be 30 years old next you know, in August.
No, nah, that's not true, man. No one's aging. We're not aging. It's not true.
So, yeah, August 21st, it came out 30 years ago, so we're getting there, you know. And I think that the beauty of the record, like I was saying earlier, is hearing the friendships record this, mm-hmm. this jam and, you know, live experience. And then we went over with the studio toys and did some Salt and Pepper. But the what you hear is a live band. Here we go, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and all that. And that's what you're going to get when we play at the Migs Fest.
Yeah.
Yeah! And that's, you know, I know that you're also becoming a father, and I don't know, you said you're like, what, 30, 40, 50, 60? What, how
old are you? I'm about to turn 45.
Yeah.
It's funny you bring that up. Yeah, dude.
That's the greatest thing I've ever heard.
You know, I know you have a child, and like you just talked about, and it's fun when people give me unsolicited advice, but I want to get solicited advice from some people. And like, what advice do you have for someone that's about to be a father for his first time?
Well, I've learned now that I had mine. I was 43 when Eden was born, and I got a lot of the stuff out of the way that's kind of fun and it would maybe distract you from being, you know, a focused father. So I've had time to get that out of the way, and now I feel so focused, so lucky to get to know the kid inside and out and give him a chance to grow. But when I see how he looks at life, it's not just straight on. It's up and down. It's from above. It's all around. He questions everything. And that makes me so alert. And so I guess not only trying to be responsible and show him and show him how to, you know, take care of himself and eat right and have good habits and you know, be a good person to the earth and all the great things that we know makes us a conscious person of the globe here, but also to see how life is so important if you really take the time and rub against each other, friends and family and relatives, rest and make things better. And I want
that. Oh, that's a bad one. Are we gonna get him back?
Not just talking about the environment. It's not just the environment, but also the way we treat the everyday people and the way we have tolerance and forgiveness. And I teach him that kind of stuff mm-hmm. is important because, you know, there's so many things against us and people don't want us to tolerate each other and they feed that and then they water that and they want to see that grow. And I got to go the other way. I'm like, you have to have tolerance and you have to have forgiveness and you have to live and let live. And then from there, be an artist or be creative. So, you know, have a good time. And then, you know, in the meantime, you know, learn from your little ones so you can kind of look at the mirror and go, how can I help them? You know, figure out everything I've learned. You know, all the shit that I've done, I'm trying to feed into him. He's only 9. I'm 52. And I'm like, okay, I can't give him all the information yet, but I can give him everything. I can give him a lot.
One last thing before we let you run, Steve. It's been awesome getting to chat with you. You know, obviously you had such an incredible career with Jane's Addiction and just music in general. And it doesn't have to be just music based, but I was thinking of all the times you've toured, all the times you've been around the world and experienced things with fans and things with whoever it may be. If you were putting together a book of like your life experience, what would be that must share story, like chapter one or whatever it may be, like that must share story to let people know about in your life?
Well, I guess I would start with a little smile and a little comic relief if I did chapter one. And so I'm in Infectious Grooves, uh-huh. 1991. We're opening up for Ozzy on the No More Tears tour. And Infectious is a great band. And we just nailed it in a great theater. But of course, the showers are on the third floor. So I go up to the third floor, hop in the shower, get out. I'm wearing a towel around my waist and a towel around my head because I used to have long, beautiful curls back then. And the elevator opens. I hop in, and it's me and Ozzy. And he says, who the f*** are you? And the door closes, and it's me and him, and I'm in a towel. So I take my hair out. I got all this hair. I'm like, yeah, I'm the drummer in the first band. And he said, oh, are you a gift?
A gift?
So yeah, no, not a gift. I'm a working man here.
Time to party.
I think the fascination of all these great musicians and our favorite heroes, Paul McCartney and Mick and Ozzy, and these cats are still alive on stage doing it. Mm-hmm. And it's just like when I was a kid, you know, Miles Davis and Dizzy and some of the great drummers, Elvin Jones, they were alive, you know, and they were like these hot jazz players. Now we got some great ass, you know, rock and rollers, you know, and they're a great example how the music, no matter how much you abuse yourself, even if you die young, the music lives on.
Mm-hmm.
Kurt Cobain, you know, we're going to be in Seattle, and I'm telling my kid about Kurt Cobain, and I'm going to bring my kid to the Seattle show, and we're going to hang out in Seattle. I'm going to show him some stuff about Hendrix and about Kurt and about the music and how it's unbelievable. The voices of Seattle, from Chris to Kurt to Lane, and to, you know, I mean, before that, of course, with Mother Love Bone. I mean, it's just the voices get shut out, but the music lives on. You know, I mean, you can't shut out the song. You know, but I think art and music is our only savior. You know,
I don't disagree. Yeah, it's absolutely true.
A lot of pain out there. A lot of people kill themselves, but we don't know anything about them. They disappear. At least we still have the music of the guys that are gone, and we can celebrate Chris.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, other people are taking their life today and tomorrow and yesterday, but you know, no one celebrates them, and it's unbelievable. You know, there's that small chance the artist has to live on. And you know, and then you look at Keith Richards. I mean, I don't know how he does it, but he's there, baby.
Yeah, when his kids die, he's going to get all their stuff.
Steven, it's been. What's that?
So, and I just can't wait to be there with you guys. In a week or so. And I'll bring in my son Eden to the gig, and we'll have a laugh, and we'll make some music and some people happy.
Oh, man, we can't wait. Again, Migs Fest 3 featuring Stephen Perkins, Peter DeStefano, Zach Malang all jumping up on stage. Our band Bruiser Brody will be there. A bunch of other great bands we'll let people know about as well that are going to be on the bill. It's going to be a great time, and it's happening over at Club Sur on October 12th. Tickets are available at eventbrite.com, and just type in Migs Fest, and you'll be able to find them that way. But Stephen, looking forward to seeing you on the 12th, my man. It's been an absolute pleasure getting the chat and talk with you, man. You're one of the good eggs out there, my brother.
Thanks, guys. It was a lot of fun, and have a good afternoon and a good evening. I'll see you in a week.
Okay. Cheers, man. Take care.
Okay, bye.
Bye. That was amazing.
Dude, that was really rad.
Outstanding.
Wow.
I didn't know what to expect. It wasn't that.
If you're a Jane's Addiction fan, if you know someone who's a Jane's Addiction fan, that's a must listen to.
I literally just re-downloaded Ritual Deal of Habitual. Yeah. Just like right there. I was like, I have to listen to this on the way home.
And you guys knew what I was talking about. It wasn't even like I was trying to blow smoke up his butt.
No, dude.
3 Days is the greatest song ever written.
Well, I love it. He just opened right up. It's the same thing, Rev. Like, I'm sitting here... really good friend of mine, Tony Reed, who lives back east, was Windowpane's first guitar player.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the guy that turned me on to Jane's Addiction. Like, one of those guys hey, man, so you've never had steak and lobster before? Let me enrich your life.
Here you go.
Here's some of that Wagyu beef.
And so, by like midway through this interview, I'm like, I got to get a hold of Tony and tell him to check out today's episode.
Yes.
Because it's like, dude, Steven wasn't just... He just opened right up. I mean, the only bummer was when his cell would drop out.
Oh, of course.
Man, he was fantastic.
I think we lost him for good on that one.
We're
not editing out those gaps because I want you to know, like, we're hanging on for dear life. Like,
please,
right when he's giving me some, like, seriously insane, awesome advice.
Here's the most important thing I would tell you as a father.
Yes, Stephen.
Steven.
And that's the truth of it.
Thanks.
On that one, I almost asked him to repeat himself. I'm like, you know what? I picked up what he was throwing down, and it's almost like a choose-your-own-adventure book. That's all right.
Did you flip to page 43, see that you're going to die, and then go back to the choice again?
Yeah. I got to redo that choice. Got to figure it out.
But the story behind just the making of 3 Days and just the stories of some of the stuff that he was talking about with the band.
I don't realize they don't go back to stuff until it's like, and I didn't realize that until he's like, he puts it in your face, even like you were saying. It's like, oh, yeah, now it makes sense when you're telling it.
Dude, I didn't realize how much of Ritual was apparently cut live.
Yeah.
And then the other thing about it, too, is like, one of the reasons I've always been a fan of Navarro is he blended sort of metal and psychedelia in a way that no one ever has before since.
I love Navarro.
And people are like, oh, Tom Morello changed guitar. I'm like, Tom Morello's remarkable. I'm not saying he didn't. I'm just saying that a lot of people don't mention Navarro. He's incredible.
Yeah.
Very creative. And then a lot of people don't mention Eric Avery, but his bass lines.
Oh, my gosh. Are the heart and soul of Jane's Addiction.
Dude, it's he develops a simple, beautiful hook. Yeah, so he gives you this simple, beautiful hook, and it's the bass line that gets stuck in your head, and that gives all those other members the freedom to dance around that bass line. So as he's describing each one of those guys, I'm sitting here like, man, that's what I always thought. Man, that's what I always hoped you'd say. It was rad.
Yeah.
Dude, I just needed some popcorn.
He was like a psychedelic Eddie Van Halen.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God. I always thought of him like, you know, psychedelic or a metal version of Jimi Hendrix. I never thought of it as a psychedelic Eddie Van Halen. I'm like, he's so dead on. Mm-hmm. And like you even said, like when he was talking about how he plays the drums, how he approaches what he does, I'm like, oh my gosh, I wasn't an idiot for thinking that's no. what he did.
He plays around Eric, like, and he responds to the band.
And like, look, I'm not, like I even said, I'm a whole different animal as far as the style of drumming, but like, even on the Bruiser Brody record, if you listen, there's a handful of songs, maybe two or three songs, where the majority of the verses are done on the floor tom and the snare.
Yeah.
And that's a straight up ripoff of,
I'd call it a nod.
A nod to Stephen Perkins, because I grew up him and Mike Borden from Faith No More. I love what they do drumming-wise because it's so tribal. They don't need to use the cymbals all the time. And I always love, like, there's parts in our songs where, like, it was funny, like, even when we did the performance with Steel Panther and while we were playing with sticks, he was hitting extra cymbals on certain parts. I'm like, yeah, you don't get it, man. I'm just joking, of course. But, like, his style of drumming was not, like, obviously, he's doing what he does.
He was more brass-oriented and you're more Tom.
Like, the cymbals, to me, when I hit a cymbal, I don't want it to be all the time. Although there are parts where I contradict myself and I'm riding a cymbal for the whole part. But to me, it's like these are moments in songs and they're layers of songs. And when Perkins was talking about that, I'm like, that's the influence that guy's had on me as a drummer, hands down.
And then there's subtleties to his playing, too. Like, I was doing a thing with a bunch of talented guys where we're playing various covers and stuff for fun, going out just to play, to play, which is what playing's all about. And we were doing Mountain Song. And I think we did it once or twice and then just kind of pulled it from the set list because it wasn't working.
Yeah.
And the reason it wasn't working is there was a subtlety to the drum performance that was missing.
Yep.
And so it's like the lettuce had been provided for the salad, but all the other stuff was not or something.
Yep.
And so after like the second time we played it, I'm like, let's pull that one. And everyone was like, yeah, it's just not working.
Yep.
But it was because the drum performance was lacking whatever that magic sauce is that Perkins pours into it.
No, I like him sauce, and Matt Cameron, Soundgarden version of Matt Cameron are two, like, good luck trying to get the vibe and the spirit. Even if you play the parts right.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Like, I would never even think of touching a Jane's Addiction song unless it's like Jane Says, because there's no drums on it.
I'll get you a kettle drum, a steel drum. Steel baby, I'll
sing. Just going to sit bling, in the back, bling, yeah. Bling, bling, every bling, once in a while, just kind of hit a thing.
Now I got him a steel drum and a dreadlock wig. And he can sit there and play the steel drum,
Steve
dude.
I would try harder to do that than actually try and play his acoustic drum. Drum versions of other songs, because I'm not touching those with a 10-foot drumstick.
Like, it's on your Mount Rushmore. He's on your Mount Rushmore. There's no way you're gonna do that. Yeah,
the guy's a monster on the drum. Yeah, so it's gonna be, dude. You guys are gonna want to be there. Like,
be at Migs Fest.
This is, even with how he described what they're gonna do on stage, I still don't know what they're gonna do on stage. Well, but it's gonna be an insane jam session.
I think what he was saying is he's gonna get together with two buddies, which. Yep. Zach hasn't played with in 20 years. Peter and him have played together 4 years, but haven't played together in a while. So it's going to be really fresh, very explorative, and probably ripping cool.
Yeah.
And I do know, kind of on the back end of the thing, they're going to play some really rad covers that hearing those three approach these covers is going to be like, oh my God, I can't believe they're playing that. And then it'll be, oh God, I can't believe they're playing that well. So, yeah, he basically was like, look, it's going to be Seat of Pants, fresh, and killer, but you've got three remarkably, remarkably talented musicians. So I guarantee you're going to be standing there going, oh, wow.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to talk to Peter DeStefano next week on the Migs Cast.
Oh, cool.
So we'll kind of get a little peek into his world as a guitarist. Damn. And a guitarist of Porno for Pyros. And that was cool, even just hearing how he described the difference of Jane's Addiction being this After Midnight band.
Yeah.
And then Porno for Pyros being this sitting at the beach band.
And as soon as he said it, it was like, that makes so much. So you can hear, and this is the deal. And it's like, of course it is.
Yeah.
And I love that. It wasn't like, oh, this was like interesting.
The best, like, behind the music that wasn't a behind the music.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. Like, if you know someone who's a Jane's Addiction fan, A, make them listen to this podcast.
Make them.
B, buy them a ticket and bring them, or even if you're a big James Addiction fan like we are, but we're going because we're playing, no big deal.
NBD, guys.
But on top of that, get tickets. MixFest 3, October 12th at Club Sur, S-U-R. It's in the Soto area of Seattle. It's going to be just a unique experience with Stephen Perkins, Peter DeStefano, and Zach Malang doing their thing. Then we're going to be playing with Bruiser Brody Band. Glenn Cannon also is going to be jumping up there with Glenn Cannon and The Damage Done. It's official. We made the band name last week.
Yeah,
and
that's now right. For yeah, it's a done deal.
Yep. That's right. Wyatt Only and The Wreckage are going to be there. Celia. Nice. And starting things off, very excited to hear Intisar. She's going to be performing an acoustic set. So it's just going to be a cool, unique night of friends, new friends, old friends, and great experiences.
Yeah, it's six artists crammed into one night. I mean, you can't. Usually you go see two, three bands in a night. You know what I mean? This is six artists and, you know, I believe the headliners, Perk and Pete and Zach, are primed to take the stage right around 10:30 or so.
Yeah.
So
it's not going to be a, like, yeah.
Yeah. You're not going to be there till 2 a.m. trying to get through all these bands. Come down, check it out. It's a diverse bill. It's a cool bill. A lot of amazing artists. It's going to be a damn good time. Do we know if Big Dogs is coming?
I'll text Jerry, but I believe last I talked to him, he was down for the idea.
Jerry, we'd love to have you down there, yeah, man. There's adequate parking, yep, and I think that's something
I need that, some of that sausage
spiritually,
in my face.
We need that.
We need a Perk Dog.
Ooh, what would a Perk Dog be?
I don't know. It's got to be something tribal. I don't know what that means, but
I don't know much about African food, man. Yeah. But it'd be rad.
They have peanut butter chicken, so maybe it's a peanut butter hot dog.
Yeah, yeah.
I would eat that. I would eat that.
You want to do the hummus,
right, Jerry,
dog? That's more of a Middle East thing. The hummus dog.
Yeah. You don't want me with hummus, spending any time with you guys after that.
You know what?
I just
want to
kiss Michelle and say a prayer over her as she leaves.
I'm so sorry.
I wish I would have done this while we had him on. I would have asked him. I didn't even think about it. We'll ask for Peter DeStefano and what kind of a specialty hot dog he would have. But I'll have Tavis, our buddy Tavis, who connected us. Thank you, Tavis, for setting all this
up. Thanks, Tavis.
He's the reason Steven, Peter, and Zach are going to be on this show. He's a big part of that. I mean, he's the part of that.
He's the conduit. He's the one that made it happen.
And he set up the interview as well. So, Tavis, I'm gonna bug you if you're not listening to this, but I'm gonna have you text Perk and be like, yo, Perk, what do you want on specialty hot dog?
But do we call it a Perk Dog? And then for DeStefano, check this out. How about the D-Dog?
The D-Dog. I'm okay with that.
Peter's choice, of course.
Then we need a Z-Dog for Zach.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. We're really putting Big Dog to work. We
could call it the Dang Milang Dog.
The Dang Milang Dog.
That's kind of Zach. If you haven't met Zach, he'd be like, how about the Dang Malang?
And shout out to Redemption Rye Whiskey for also providing help to get these guys here to Seattle to be a part of MIGSFest 3 Club Sur, October 12th, eventbrite.com. Just type in MIGSFest. You'll be able to find it. Get tickets before they sell out. I feel like there's going to be a lot of Jane's Addiction fans there. So you want to be a part of this. It's going to be a blast. Everything good in your world?
Yeah, life is good, man.
Nice.
Just looking forward to MIGSFest and trying to make sure people know this is going off like a bomb. Because as my buddy Wyatt said, I think yesterday or the day before, it's been a bit of a blur, but he was like, dude, I think this is the show of the year, or at least the show of this fall.
Yep.
Because we were just discussing, you know, the event in and of itself and why it was like, dude,
it's going to be nuts.
This is the show.
Yeah. It's a party, and I've had a few people say, like, I've gone to the last two MIGSFests, and I never leave without great memories and great experiences. And that's really, it's more than just a concert. It's a party.
It's going to be a really
celebration.
Good time.
Bring your favors.
We're bringing it back after a year off. Sorry about the year off, you know, but we're back. And we're back big, so
way more epic.
Join us.
And then what was I going to also mention? Oh, and quite possibly, like we said last time, this is one of quite possibly the last Bruiser Brody shows, if not, I doubt forever, but for the foreseeable future. So if you're a fan of Bruiser Brody and you've liked what we've been doing, you do not want to miss this show because you might not have an opportunity to see us again live for a very long time.
True. So be there.
And no bad reasons behind it, so don't start.
No. It's not. It's the farthest thing in the world from that, actually. Yeah. Well put. I hadn't considered that.
Yeah, I don't want people to think like there's any
ill-will. Band drama.
No, man.
No real behind the music on this one. It's going to be more like the Hootie and the Blowfish behind the music.
Yeah. It's just like, oh, take a break.
I tell you, Brody was founded by five guys that love and respect each other, and zero drama, zero pressure, zero stress. Let's go make music and have fun.
JT's hair is going on tour by itself.
The agent for his hair was very difficult with this band.
I went down to see Jamie Novosky at Slim's, and JT's wife Linda was there, and JT's on stage just, you know, really playing his ass off, playing some beautiful guitar behind Jamie Nova, and I leaned over to Linda, and I was like, you know, it's the beard, isn't it? It's the beard. And his wife looked at me. She smiled and she went, there's magic in that beard.
Magic beard. Magic beard.
So, yeah.
So come on now. Migs Fest, October 12th. Club Sur, get your tickets now and we'll see you there and we will party. Let's get on out of here. I got a stupid meeting to go to.
Boo, meetings.
Boo. But next week, I think we might have to start early again. I might have another meeting again, but I'll figure that out.
Hopefully my bike will start next week.
Yeah.
You made it. You're fine.
I made it.
But maybe next week, Peter DeStefano, we're getting you pumped up and ready to rock for Migs Fest. Also, our friend Tyler Smith, the comedian from The Dope Show.
Cool.
He's got a comic show coming up.
Sweet.
It's a comedy show coming up, so I think he's going to pop in next week as well. So that'll be a lot of fun, too. Lots of stuff going on the Migs Fest. Anything left to promote?
I love it. You just said lots of things going on the Migs Fest.
Yeah, this is the Migs Fest radio show.
So the Migs cast is October 12th at SUR.
Yes.
Club Sur.
Come on.
Rev, you got Grid City Podcast?
Yeah, we do. What did we talk about? Oh, yeah, Scanners, the movie.
Oh, how'd that go?
It went interesting. We couldn't figure out drunkenly who actually suggested it, and most of the people hated the movie.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, I still think it's fantastic.
My man.
This Friday, 3-2-1 battle, I'm wrestling Kikyo, the Fallen Flower.
Ooh.
It's the first match I'm having as a bad guy, and I'm going to beat her senseless.
Oh, dude.
Bald Fitness, this Friday, stay positive. I won't really beat her senseless.
I do have
I'll
a show.
Beat her senseless.
I can't beat your wrestling match Friday, because I do have a show at Everybody's in Port Orchard Friday night. I should have announced that. Sorry.
Brother.
Now that the music's gone. But yeah, if you're in that area or want to come to that area, I will be doing 3 hours of music at Everybody's in Port Orchard. So
nice.
Come down, join me. It's going to be a mellow, cool hang and might play some stuff. You know, might even play some Jane's Addiction.
All right, stay positive. We'll see you guys next week.
I'm Tobin Heath.
And I'm Kristen Press.
We're World Cup champions, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Week in and week out, we sit down with sports legends, cultural icons, and global changemakers to talk everything from clutch games to causes that matter.
This is about creating the future of women's sports, a future that's honest, inclusive, and real.
Join us for our reimagined journey. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.